Second hour, Darren Donica Chase here on this Monday. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe with you. Max Hurst, manning the board at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Willie will join us a little bit later in the program. Every Monday at this time, we talk with TD. That is his podcast. He drops every week. You should check it out. NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. He's Teron Davenport. He now joins us. Teron, we are about a month out from training camp, so we're getting a little bit closer to getting everything cranked up. What is a position battle that really, really interests you right now?
You know, to be honest with you, it's the backup quarterback position. I'm really,
I knew you were going to say that.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
I've been talking about DeShone Kizer
a lot.
And I've been impressed with him. And, you know, we know already what Logan Woodside could do. You know, I call him a Jeff Garcia-like quarterback, where he'll keep everything matriculating down the field. But I just like what Kizer brings to the table as far as pushing it down the field in the air, you know, like taking deep shots. However, I will also say this, just to give you on the flip side of the ball, I'm really intrigued about that cornerback position, because once Caleb Farley comes back and he's on the field, that right corner spot and nickel spot, that's going to be pretty cool to watch, because I know they would like Christian Fulton to take over that right corner position. And I got to talk to him over the weekend, and he's ready to go, you know, and he clearly has a lot of ability. We saw that at LSU. And then you got Elijah Molden in the mix, too, as far as the nickel is concerned. So they suddenly have a nice, awesome-looking rotation of cornerbacks. Obviously, you know, Jackrabbit Jenkins, he's on the left side locking that down. So I'm just curious how all that's going to play out, just the rotation itself.
You said you know what they have in Logan Woodside. How do you – I mean, I'm curious to hear. How do you know what they have? I mean, we've seen him throw a fake punt. I mean, how do we know what truly they have in Logan Woodside? Clearly,
well,
they love him, but, I mean, how do we really know?
This is where we differ. My catalog goes back to preseason games and watching them in those. So,
okay, there you go. Teron said that's all you got.
Peace out.
I definitely, you and I are on the same page on this, because I know you've been beating the drum on backup quarterback for a long time, and they, you know, they've really, in John Robinson's tenure, got it right once. Got it, like, hit a home run with that position once, with when they made the trade for Tannehill, and then even Mariota when he became the backup. But I think there are things I think we have Teron back. I think there's things that they see in practice that we obviously don't, that makes them feel confident in him.
We did not zap you. To my knowledge, we did not zap you. So the
that
floor
was,
is back,
man,
in yours.
That was DeShone Kizer saying, hey, man, you better stop talking good about him and talk about me. I think that's what happened. But no, just getting back to Woodside, I think really the thing is, and you're right, I mean, regular season-wise, we've seen him throw one pass. And so you got to take it with in stride with context. But looking at preseason games, looking at him in practice, you know, one thing that comes to me is that he has very good control of the offense. And that's what I mean when I say matriculate the ball down the field. Like, he'll make the right reads, right? And it's just rarely going to be that deep in-breaking route, or that post down the field, or that corner route, that Tannehill throws so well. So to me, that's the difference. And that's where we know what he could do, because he is a guy that can come in and operate the offense to an extent, and it just would be longer drives, and teams would be more inclined to stack the box, even though they already do it a lot as is. But I think there's less of a threat as far as stretching the field is concerned with Woodside than there is with Kizer or Tannehill.
I know you've been pro Kizer. In fact, I'm sure to this point you have to have a jersey by now. So you are pro Kizer.
Oh, no. Hold on now. Let's slow down now. No jersey or anything like that. I call it how I see it. That's all. And if I see a player doing well, hey, listen, I'm gonna call it out. Just the same as when I see a player doing bad, So let's not do that. No jersey or anything like that. I'm objective, and I call a spade a spade.
Okay, so why do you think, because you think Kizer's going to beat him out, why do you think that, you know, clearly there's something about Logan Woodside, this franchise, Mike Vrabel, John Robinson, these coaches, they like or love. I mean, they've made it abundantly clear. I mean, I've been, you know, counting him out for a good while now, and they just keep trotting him back. So why do you think a guy like DeShone Kizer is enough for them to say? Because, I mean, DeShone Kizer's night, but we've seen DeShone Kizer. I mean, I don't have a clue if he's any better than Logan Woodside when given an opportunity. We have at least seen him out there on Sundays. It didn't look great in my opinion, but why do you think Kizer actually beats out Woodside?
Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty simple, right? As a coach, what you typically want, especially an offensive coordinator, you want, if your lead guy goes down, you want to be able to put the next guy up into the situation without having to change a lot with the playbook. So that's really what it is. When you look at Kizer and when you look at Tannehill, they're very similar quarterbacks in that they're athletic. You could put them on the move as far as rolling the pocket, booting, those type of things, play action. They both have big arms where they could push the ball down the field. So that play action post that you love to see going to Khalif Raymond over the last couple of years, now Julio Jones, there's a match there, right? And then when you look at A.J. Brown running that deep in-breaking route off of play action, catching the football and blowing defenders up and running to the end zone, you have to have arm strength to do that, right, in addition to anticipation. Whereas Woodside, he's more of an anticipation type quarterback. Kizer is power and anticipation. So I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, again, God forbid something happen to Tannehill.
Yeah.
But if it does, you want to still be able to execute the offense similarly. And if you remember, go back to 2018, right? The Jaguars game. Or no, not the Jaguars game, Texans game.
Oh.
The Texans game. And you could go to the Colts game too. But when Mariota, you know, was not in the game, they had to use Kevin Byard to get a passing touchdown. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't want to be in that type of predicament. Now, I'm not saying Woodside is as bad as Gabbert, because I don't believe that to be the case, because Woodside has one thing that Gabbert doesn't, and that's he's not scared. So I think that's the difference between those guys. But to your point with the Colts game, you know, you had Jayon Brown having to single-handedly keep this team in the game in a win-or-go-home type of situation, and they ended up losing. And you don't want to be in that predicament. Your backup quarterback, and trust me, I know this from experience, covering the Eagles in 2017, right? Carson Wentz goes down week 11, Nick Foles comes in and just gradually gains momentum, and in the playoff he just blows up. And next thing you know, he's the daggone Super Bowl MVP. The backup quarterback position is more important than a lot of people really seem to think.
Oh, I know. I'm with you on that. How did people feel about Foles in that market at the time? Did anybody? What were people? Were people saying anything about him? Like when he was just sitting there as the backup holding the clipboard?
Yeah, I mean, he had already had a history because he had one of the best seasons ever for a quarterback. The 27 touchdown and 2 interception season he had under Chip Kelly.
Right.
So they knew he could play, but he bounced around. But I think it really, the love for him didn't really start happening until that Falcons game.
The run.
That's really,
okay.
Yeah, well, that was the first playoff game right there. That's when it really just kind of kicked off, that divisional game. And it's funny because when Wentz went down, man, Christmas was canceled in Philly. Let me tell you, people were distraught, man. And I'm not going to hold you. I was a little upset myself because my book came out, right? You know, my book on Wentz came out that Wednesday, and he went down that Sunday. So you remember A Bronx Tale. I was feeling like Eddie Mush, you know what I mean? But everything ended up working for them, and look what happened with Foles. And he, you know, he's beloved. I mean, the man has a daggone statue up there on the sports complex off of Patterson and Broad.
Mm. Speaking with TD, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, this time every Monday. What do you think about the right tackle, that battle? How do you think that's going to play out in camp?
Good question. I think it's going to play out. It's going to be – I think looking at it, I still think Tyson Brelo is going to open up camp as the first team right tackle. But in my opinion, he and Kendall Lamb are going to get the bulk of the snaps. And they're so preoccupied with getting Dylan Raiden's reps all over. I mean, he's playing all over the offensive line, outside of center. You know what I mean? He's pretty much up and down the offensive line. And I think if you want him to be the right tackle, you're probably going to have to hone in on that position, right? Because when you're learning, I mean, left tackle, right tackle, like it's two different things. You know what I mean? There's different steps. You know, it's kind of difficult to do both, especially as a rookie. So I think he is eventually going to be the starter, and I don't think that's going to happen till week four. So to answer your question, I look at it, I think Kendall Lamb is actually going to start the season opener, and then Ty Cimbrello will continue to be a rotational guy that they could plug in at left and right. And you got Quisenberry, David Quisenberry, who, you know, will be a depth guy at, all over the place, and, you know, Raiders will eventually take over.
How do you think they're going to treat – like, what would Raiden's have to do in camp and preseason to just shoot up that depth chart that you just threw out there? What would he – I mean, would do you think they truly think, hey, this is going to be kind of like Nate Davis, right? They're going to be – it's going to take time. We're going to – he's going to have to go through the proper steps, and then, you know, maybe by middle of the year he's ready to – you know, what would he have to do to shoot up that depth chart ranking?
Well, I think it really comes down to one thing, and what Keith Carter, I love hearing Coach Carter coach those guys up, and one thing that he consistently says is play with speed and violence. And I think that's what he's going to have to do in a nutshell. And to kind of elaborate or expand upon that, really, you know, what it comes down to is when you're asked to fire off the football and drive the man back, you got to do it. And when you're asked to be reliable and pass pro, right, and keep the big investment safe, you got to do it. And it also comes down to not having to be told, okay, you know, what the heck were you thinking? This was, you know, 68 toss and you're doing this when your steps are supposed to be like this. Or, you know, on this stretch play, your job is to get a hand on the defensive end and move up to work your way up to the linebacker. Why the heck did you stay with the deep? Those type of things. I think that's what you want to avoid. And fortunately for Dylan Raiden's his sake, I've seen a progression, you know, going from rookie minicamp to this point now, and there were very rare moments where he had to be coached up after a play. Now, I mean, granted, you know, you're going to have certain things that have to be touched up and cleaned up just in the interest of relentlessly pursuing perfection, you know. So that's something that you're going to come up with. But I think really it's just going to be just – consistently maintaining his assignment and just doing what he's asked to do and continuing to learn and get a better grasp. And it's just like anything, when you have a good grasp of the direction that you're going and the things that you're being asked to do, you're going to be more productive.
We're talking to Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN. And I know another position battle we're all going to pay attention to is going to be tight end. Now, you went out to tight end you. You saw what they were doing last week. Did you find somebody, or was there anybody that stood out to you that maybe John Robinson and the Titans could look at?
I didn't have my recruiting hat on. I did talk to
maybe
Zach
some Gerson. Guy named Delaney.
Yeah, D Love, Delaney Walker. Yes. You know, he was out there moving really well. I'll say that. And obviously, the ankle is something that a lot of people are concerned with. But for me, just watching him. Just the suddenness, right? Being able to start and stop. Like, if your ankle is bad, you're not going to be able to do that and do it over and over again. And I saw him do that, you know, and he actually was in there. I forget who the other tight end was he was working with, but he was one of the guys that was given instruction and detailed information on how to get a release and, you know, how to free yourself up at the line of scrimmage. I thought that was really interesting, but. You know, I bumped into Michael Pruitt as well. You know, got to talk to him a little bit, gave him some spots to see out there in the Bay. You know, that's one of my favorite cities. So I, you know, gave him a little rundown there. But I think really at this point, you know, it's Firkser, Anthony Firkser, sticky fingers, man. It's really on him, and he's gotten noticeably bigger, like in the legs, and he's another sudden guy. He runs routes really well, and it's just watching. He and Michael Pruitt were working together, and I was just focusing on how his releases are. And it's funny, because I asked him back at his camp, you know, if he had a basketball background, and he laughed and asked me why. But I told him it looks like you're trying to cross somebody over when you come off the ball and also on the top of your routes, and that was exactly the case. So it was good watching these guys firsthand work on different things. And let me tell you this, I always admired, like, the sauce and stuff that Travis Kelce would put on his routes, but actually listening to him explain the why and the details and the technique that goes into it, that was awesome. Like, they could have had that camp for 4 hours, and I would have just sat there listening to him just in awe of how much he was able to break it down and really teach the other guys. I mean, there were points where they just said, hey, all right, we're going to work on the top of the route. Kelce, come here. And he just stepped right out there. And, you know, I love passion and enthusiasm, yeah. You know, so he would step right out there, show it, and then give a quick, woo, you know, Ric Flair style. So I just, man, I enjoyed it, man. And George Kittle, high energy dude. It was great watching him, you know, show the guys some stuff about blocking and just exploding off of the ball. Darren Waller, you know, seeing him.
I love him.
There was a video that I got of him. I laid down in on the turf, and I had the camera pointing up, and I was right there at the break point, and it's just like he was running. It looked like he was about to run right into the screen, but, you know, no fear, man. I didn't flinch. He kept the camera on him, and it was a nice shot.
So we had Jordan Matthews, longtime mm-hmm. Vanderbilt wide receiver, on with us, and he was there. He was at tight end U as he's trying to convert to a tight end. I don't know how much you got to see of him, if you got to talk to him at all, but what do you think about that, of a wide receiver guy that's played wide receiver his whole career now making the transition?
Well, that news was broken on Talking with TV.
Yeah, that's right.
He told me, and we were just talking about, and it's just crazy how it happened, because I was just asking him about being a bigger slot receiver, and then that's when he just kind of went right into how he's seen the game get smaller from the outside all the way to the inside to tight end, to in line. And he was like, well, you know, I'm going to put on some weight and maintain agility, speed, you know, and move to tight end. And I talked to him a little bit more on Thursday about it. And I talked to him Friday, the day after. And he told me that it was really good getting the opportunity to learn some things from the guys. And he made some good points. And because as receivers, right, what we're trained to do, like, we don't know the snap count. I mean, like, we know it, but we don't really pay attention to that. You're paying attention to the ball. As soon as that ball is hiked, you know, or moves just a little bit, you're gone. You know, you're always on the ball. But as the tight end, you have to be on the snap count. And Jordan and I, we were talking about that. And it just the difference is a subtle difference, right? As a receiver, you got your one foot on the line of scrimmage and you're looking down the line, right? So you're able to see. You look down the line, you look at the coverage, you know what I mean? You look down the line, and right before, like, when the quarterback's in his cadence, you're down the line, one eye kind of on the ball, the other eye just looking at what the secondary is doing. And it's different as a tight end, right? You can't be looking down the line on the ball, because you got to shoot out of your stance and just kind of, like, get explosiveness out of that. And that's the big thing that he's working on, is really just, you know, getting used to being in the three-point stance. And it sounds elementary, but when all your life you've been working from the stand-up position, right, the two-point, it's different, you know.
Sure.
So that's what he's working on. But fortunately, with how this game is, the way that they're using tight ends, you know, he wouldn't always have to be in line. They could flex him. You know, he could be detached just right off the ball, like in a wing type situation. You could send him in motion and do different things. So it was cool talk. He told me that he was really watching Evan Engram, Irv Smith Jr., and there was somebody else. I forget who it was. But he was really watching them because the body types are similar and some of the things that they're asked to do. But he's healthy. He's good to go. You know, clean bill of health. He was moving, you know, pretty well and obviously catching the football well. And I think a team's going to benefit, you know, from bringing him aboard. And it'll be a good addition for them that I think will pay off.
Yeah, and it definitely was on Talking with TD. I apologize for not bringing that up. So thanks for catching me there. Another guy, I was listening to the morning show earlier, and they brought up somebody that is still a free agent, and this just surprises me. How surprised are you that Kenny Vaccaro is still available?
I'm not really surprised, honestly.
Why?
You know, and this was because it's just the way the game goes. Like, he's at the point where he's a free agent that's going to be a plug-and-play addition. And I mean, that's where he was before he got here, right? Now, obviously, there were other things involved, you know, no trouble or anything like that, but interest that he had as far as, you know, along the lines of the Eric Reed situation and you know, being for the cause, so to speak. And look, teams won't tell you, but it scares some of them away. Trust, I know enough to say that convincingly. And I think now at this point, you know, he's obviously a few years older than he was back then, but, you know, he's just a guy that I'm sure is on speed dial. You know, somebody goes down, boom. Or if you don't like the flavor that your defense has as far as, like, you want to influx just, you know, a killer mindset, right, you know, or influx toughness to your locker room, call 24. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's really what it comes down to, and I think that's the situation. He's achieved mercenary status where he's basically a hired gun. You know, come in here, I need you to help me with this, this, and this, and that's pretty much it.
As we wrap this up, I know you got a feature coming up on Christian Fulton. You've done a lot of good things with him, but he's got a cool place called The Trenches that you're going to be talking about here very soon.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a feature in the coming weeks. I got to sit down with Christian Fulton as well as his brother, Keith Fulton, and their shop is right there on Buchanan Street. Great area, you know, a beautiful vibe. So definitely go check it out. And it's a mixture of art, fashion, and something that I love, sneakers, you know. So fashion and sneakers, hey, I'm going to be there. And they have a lot of unique pieces and things like that, and I'll be going to add to my collection because, you know, we got to keep the bow tie swag on 100, and
that's
what we're working to do. But it's just a great idea that they came up with, and the story is really cool. I'll definitely share more, obviously, in the future, but it's not one of those things where it was just like, hey, I'm an athlete, I'm doing this. You know, there was a lot of work. Shout out to Keith Fulton, you know, the Vision One. He did an excellent job of just actually having that vision, you know, and just seeing things out. And, you know, I really, really respect the grind that he went through. And just the name, The Trenches, you know, there's something special to it because that's what a lot of us had to go through to get to a point of where we're somewhat successful, right? Because you never settle. You know, success to me and to a lot of us is just, it's an ongoing journey. So I just, you know, the name is perfect, The Trenches, because that's what we rose from, you know?
Something I've done in the past at both a public library and at schools, I've read to kids. Was it the rookies? How did the rookies do last week?
Hey, that was fun, man. And Blake Harville, let me tell you, he has this book called Jabari Jumps, and it's not his book. It's just one that he was kind of like promoting, and it was hilarious, man. The kids had a great time. You know, all of the rookies, they were there. Caleb Farley, he talked about the importance of reading. And you know, Rashad Weaver talked about how, as a kid, he hated to read, but he understood that it was something he had to do. And he said even to this day he hates reading, but he does it, and it really helps him with retention when it comes time to looking at the playbook and being able to retain it. And I think, you know, in this day and age where – you have just such, everything is microwavable, right? I think it is important to sit down and read a book because it makes your brain develop differently, you know, and there's a lot of things going on in schools that should be, like, not going on in schools that should be, you know, like music, gym class, you know, more emphasis on reading books. So it was great to see that happen. And the Titans, I'll say, you know, I've covered the 49ers, the Ravens, the Eagles, and now the Titans. And, you know, when it comes to giving back to the community and just being involved and rolling up the sleeves, digging in and doing stuff, they've been outstanding. And that's coming from, you know, a viewpoint from four different teams, right? And just in all aspects, they've been great. You know, Miss Amy Adams Strunk donating stuff to different causes, right? You know, in the black community, in the women's community, what she's done as far as developing her programs for women to be able to work towards front office positions and scouting positions. And then even, you know, let's talk about the tornado relief, what they did. I mean, you got Mike Vrabel and John Robinson literally boots on the ground carrying cases of water and loading up a truck and driving it and doing that stuff. So I really wanted to shout them out for that. And even, you know, the reading thing that they did that last Monday, it's remarkable seeing it. And I'm proud to be able to cover a team that does that and kind of shine light on it.
Yep, no doubt about it. Enjoy the visits as always. You have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Yeah, for sure. And we got a nice one for you on Talking with TD this week. That right there is what we call a teaser, so stay tuned.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Check it out.
Teron Davenport, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company. Online at freedomtireguys.com. He joins us every Monday at 11 o'clock. So check out Talking with TD this week. He just gave you a good little tease. Good reason to check it out. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donica, Chase. Don't forget, This Is What I Know. Coming up at 11:45, we've got a great prize. Tickets to see Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band at Ascend Amphitheater in mid-July. So a little bit less than a month away. So a lot more coming here on the DDC, ESPN 102.5, The Game. A little Joan Jett bringing us back. Don't forget to go to thegamenashville.com to check out Nashville's best deals. When you see that, click on it. Right now, some of the deals that are happening, $50 Bad Axe Throwing in Nashville, gift card for only $25. Buy one, get one free for Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon, plus $20 Grain and Berry gift card for just $10. Get yours now while supplies last. Remember, go to thegamenashville.com. This is What I Know coming up in about 15 minutes. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe here with you on this Monday as we inch a little bit closer to July. It's hard to believe. Gosh, we're almost in July, and we're kind of getting to that, like I said, month out from training camp. We're kind of getting to that point here, you know, NBA and Stanley Cup about to finish up, College World Series about to finish up, and then it's going to be tumbleweed for the most part. I get it. There's still Major League Baseball. I get it. There's still golf and things going on. But, you know, it quiets down, the calm before the storm.
It's okay. It does, but you know, I think we all need a little break before things get up and going again. So, you know, it'll be good. Be fine. Get a little vacay in and then rock and roll. Around my birthday in the start of July, that's when I always started to know that there was about really a good month of summer left before you got the summer scaries, which meant school was starting again.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, typically we're doing a trip now around our anniversary, and
wait a minute,
a little bit later.
Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Today is your anniversary.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, we're gonna go a little bit later this year, so so doing things a little bit different. So yeah, so we're used to kind of being gone.
Yeah, you're always gone now,
right? And like you, I think you said this on Friday, this was typically when some stuff was going on NHL-wise, obviously, yeah. They're in a little bit different window than normal. But typically, yeah, news has broken on the Predators front when we're on a trip. Because this is...
Yeah, that happens to you a lot, actually.
Yes, yeah. Like I said, normal in their normal windows, we've seen some things happen when I'm on those trips. But, you know, I was reading, and the reason I brought up kind of what... Teron thought about what would be a fun camp battle. I was looking at Ben Arthur, what he put out there on the Tennessean. He was doing his roster projections. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, but he was kind of looking at, you know, where they would go, and he thinks they keep Kaiser and they cut Logan Woodside. You see the running backs. So that was interesting. Do you think they're going to keep Henry, Hill, Evans, McNichols, and Blassing game?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I
kind of feel like that's not
going to happen. I kind of feel like McNichols could be the odd man out. Even though he's been around, he's, you know, you can remember a few years ago, when I first started on the show and we became Darren Donica Chase, I did a 53-man roster after every preseason game, and I had McNichols making it. I liked McNichols a lot, and I still do, but I know that they've brought Hill in for, you know, giving them a little bit more behind Henry. But the bottom line is Darrington Evans has to be something. I mean, he was a draft pick last year. We've talked about the draft class that didn't do anything for them, that you got to get more out of that draft class. You got to get more out of your rookies this year. But, I mean, Darrington Evans has to have a purpose for this team and has to make some sort of impact if he's going to still be here. So I think just looking at the numbers, I feel like that they're not going to keep that many. And who knows? They may, you know, they may look at, do they need a fullback, a true fullback?
But with their tight end situation,
I think the answer is
yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that bodes well for
a resounding yes, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's been good here. Like, he has made an impact. He's made some plays. So he's certainly stuck around. So, I mean, that just points to, unless McNichols really shows out in camp, and, you know, I think the battle is between McNichols and Hill.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel, too. And I do feel like Hill has the advantage. He has the inside track. But, you know, Hill comes in here and looks very, very average in their preseason games and in camp. Then he will be he'll be out.
Right.
I'm with you. I don't believe they're keeping five. I think they keep four, and I would say right now. And I think Blassingame, nothing against him. It's just that position really isn't valued much, although Vrabel did come from a franchise that did value the fullback. Belichick does love the fullback. So, and Blassingame's been good, but I just think because of their tight end depth or lack of, I think that he's going to, you know, he stays on the roster almost by default. Like I said, not that he's not deserving, but I just think right now you got to roll with him because of where they are at the other position. So, yeah, I kind of feel like McNichols is kind of the guy on the outside looking in. Wide receivers, he's got six, keeping six. Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, Josh Reynolds. Let's just start with the obvious. Dez Fitzpatrick, can they cut a – what was he, fourth round?
Fourth round.
Can you cut a fourth round pick? Sure.
Sure.
Out of camp? Yeah, it happens. Happens all the time. Do I think they will? Probably not. So I think he's almost a sure thing unless he just gets out there and looks completely lost, or they get out there and they look at him, which does happen, and go, whoops, we made a huge mistake. This guy is not going to cut it at this level. But I think overall, I think he's probably got a real good shot.
I have him. I would say he's – I would go 85% in.
I would go 75% in.
Okay.
70 to 75%. Nick Westbrook, Akine, and Marcus Johnson is the six that Ben Arthur has them keeping. What do you think about that?
I
no Racy McMath.
Yeah, which I don't think he makes it.
But
I think
special teams
potentially. But see, think about it. You got Cam Batson that has played when Cam Batson has had his opportunity. I mean, he has made some plays. He's had special teams that he's able to play, so you gotta factor that in. Cody Hollister's a guy that has hung around. Marcus Johnson is there. Mason Kinsey that Teron really likes? He's brought him up a few times.
Yep, he has.
Chester Rogers is another one. So he had Nick Westbrook, Akine, and who was the other one? Who was the last one?
Sorry, hold on. I had to clear my throat. The other one was Marcus Johnson.
Marcus Johnson. Okay. I don't know. That one's so tough to factor in.
What do you think about Kalijah Lipscomb?
I don't think he makes it.
I
think they're interested enough to just see, okay, is he somebody that could be a practice squad guy? You know, it's unfortunate because Pinckney and Lipscomb, as we know, we talked about when they were at Vanderbilt, their junior years, they were like, these guys are going to the next level. They're there. They got it. It's the big three. And it just
– look at the big three and
yeah,
really haven't done anything.
No, they're nothing. So I would say no. You know, Westbrook Akine, I haven't seen enough. I didn't see enough out of him. He had some opportunities, and I feel like he missed on those. So I don't know. But that's going to be a tough battle.
I think Jones, Brown, Reynolds, Fitzpatrick are four that are in.
Yep.
And I think, what is that, nine guys are battling for two spots.
Yes. I think you were spot on. And I think Batson, you give a little bit of a leg up to because he's been here and they've always liked him. He has hung around for the right reasons, and they like him. So I would give Batson the edge for the fifth spot, and then Hollister's another one. Hollister's been around, but he's never been quite able to break through. You know, he's pretty much been a practice squad guy. So maybe they want new blood, and that's where somebody like a Marcus Johnson or a Mason Kinsey, can do that. But
I wonder if McMath can make any real impact on special teams enough to keep him on a roster spot.
Well, and I think the guy that he's really going to have to fight against is probably Batson. You know, for that. I mean, is this team ever going to find a returner? I mean, not that it has the same.
I've given up long time ago trying to worry about that.
I can tell you right now, if McMath runs something, it doesn't even have to be back for a touchdown, but if he just has a decent return, I'm going, sign him. There you go. Just bring him on. Surely it can't be worse.
Their return game has just been such a zero for so long.
I've stopped
worried about it.
It doesn't matter like it used to. But you know what's funny? Like you bring up Fitzpatrick and go, can they really cut a fourth round pick? I mean, think about Derek. Derek had a career as a fourth round pick because of special teams. That got him in the league. Like that's how he was able to stick around. That's how much it used to matter. And now it matters, but not to that level. And Derek was the first 3 or 4 years in his career. That's how he made his money. He was a special teams guy. He was a return guy. And he made plays, and he was very important. And then when injuries happen, you had Thigpen get hurt. I think Chris was one of those that was hurt. You know, Derek, next man up, and then, of course, he runs away with it and becomes one of the best, if not the best, receivers this team's ever had. So it's different now, though. Like, now it's you look at a fourth-round pick and go, okay, well, you got to stick as the fourth wide receiver. That's what they're wanting him to do on this team. It just shows you how much the league has changed and, you know, the fact that there's just not as much of an emphasis on the return game anymore.
Tight ends, he's got them keeping four. Firkser, Jeff Swaim, Tommy Hudson, Briley Moore, McKinney.
I don't know how you can not – I mean, I don't know how you can evaluate that position truly right now outside of Swaim and Firkser. I mean, what do you really know about Tommy Hudson or Briley Moore McKinney?
Nothing.
Right. And I mean, we know Pinckney from Vanderbilt, Miller Forstall is a rookie from Alabama. That, you know, had a nice career. But I mean, I don't know how you can truly say, yeah, Tommy Hudson for sure, Briley Moore McKinney for sure. Yeah, those guys. And I don't mean at all. I don't know. Like, there's
well,
no
I guess
evaluation.
That's why we're talking about it, because these are going to be real camp battles that we're going to be talking about, because somebody's going to emerge, right? Somebody's going to stick out, and somebody's not. And so we're going to be talking about it, and that's what's interesting about doing this and talking about it now, because we are going to be paying close attention. Like I said, I think we feel pretty good about four wide receivers, and then there's going to be nine guys battling for possibly two spots. Nine guys. Like, somebody's got to emerge, right? Somebody's got to stand out. Somebody's got to make an unbelievable catch in the back of the end zone. Somebody's got to make an unbelievable one-handed catch that we'll be talking about. You know, same thing with the running backs. You know, like between those two, I feel pretty good. It's just going to come down to those two. One of them is going to make it. One of them's not. And I think, that, you know, the thing that I brought up with Teron, the guards, the right tackle situation, I think is very interesting.
Yep.
I don't know how. I mean, they've got a lot of guys over there. So
the thing that
I don't know who's going to emerge. Somebody's got to. You know, somebody's got to merge one as the number one. Like, I don't know. I think Teron said, did he say Kendall Lamb would win out against Arizona?
He said he'd start.
He said he would. He said Sam Brailer will start in camp, and then Lamb would beat him out. Is that? I think I remember him saying that's how he said it. And then you've got Quisenberry, and you've got, you know, what does then Raiden's? When's he ready?
Right, but I will say that. You know what Cimbrello can do. You know what Quisenberry can do. They overachieved like no other, filling in for Luan last year, which ultimately, if you think about it, that cost Dennis Kelly his job because they saw that they had two guys that, and Cimbrello was only on a one-year deal, but you could sign cheaper.
Yeah, by Quisenberry the way, he still hasn't signed.
No, I know. Still I know. It cost him a job, and it was no fault of Dennis Kelly's, but it was like, oh, hey, there's two guys I can get cheaper to be – you know, a swing guy, swing tackle. And so ultimately Dennis Kelly's gone. And yeah, you're right. He hadn't been signed yet. I think he will. I think he will before camp by somebody, whether it's injury or what have you. But sure, yeah. And but the thing about this and looking at what Ben Arthur has put together for the Tennessean, keeping five running backs, six receivers, four tight ends seems – I feel like that those numbers are a little bit off.
Yep.
You know? That's why the tight end battle is going to be so important because if you feel like after camp that there are four tight ends that you go, yes, they're going to do exactly what I need them to do and they can play every role that a tight end plays, including maybe lining up at fullback, then Blassing game's gone. Then you have proven that, okay, you know what, I don't need him. I don't need a fullback. I'll just go with four running backs, four tight ends. We're good. Use that position somewhere else. But they can't definitively say that right now.
Yep. Come back and tell us. We'll come back to this. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, we need to do the defense.
Yep. We'll come back. You tell us what you know. Got a great prize attached to it, but you're going to have to get involved. You're going to have to tell us by calling in our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. It's open-ended. You just tell us what you know. We do that next.
Some things you just know.
I have to know.
Do you think everybody knows?
When you know, you just know. It's time to set the record straight. Join the fun on This Is What I Know with Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Yep. We do want to know what you know. Got to get involved. Got to join the show. It's open-ended. Take it however you want. What in the world do you know here on this Monday? 615-737-1025. That is our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jimmy Buffett is coming to Ascend Amphitheater next month. You've got an opportunity to win tickets.
Yeah, he's doing two shows.
About that. In fact, I just saw... Didn't he just jump on the stage at Exit Inn?
He did.
Just over the weekend or Friday or something? I saw that. Pretty cool. Only in Nashville you get that kind of stuff.
Have you ever seen him?
It's funny that you asked.
Oh, the flood.
Yeah, but we had tickets. Yeah. We were supposed to go that Saturday night, and we could not because 24 was underwater, and all the roads were shut down.
Hmm. Yeah, he's a good show.
No, I've not seen them. That was, 2010 we were going, and there was this historical flood that came that kind of ruined it. So, and I think they still did the show that night, I think that's right.
I think you're right.
Because, you know, we didn't really understand what had happened until, like, Sunday morning. Like, we didn't really, right? You know, like the overhead shots, the helicopters, and and that's when it was like,
well, hang on.
Whoa.
I don't know if they did or not because Bridgestone flooded.
I don't remember. I don't.
The arena floor was flooded.
I don't remember them canceling. I kind of felt like they did it. but I could be wrong.
You may be right, and they got out of there before it flooded, because what happened was the Music City Center was a hole in the ground.
Yep.
And that all the water went into that hole, and then that flooded into the arena.
Yep.
Because I remember the picture, because they had to redo all the locker rooms and everything after that, because they got all messed up. But there was a picture of inside the bowl where there's just water where the rink should be.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt. But I'm pretty sure, I mean, unless they canceled it last minute, we were still trying to figure out a way to go, because we had looked into it and they said there is still going to be a show. We were trying to figure out routes that we could get downtown, and we just realized it just wasn't safe. Remember, they were telling people, like, please don't leave your house. But to my knowledge, I don't remember them actually canceling it, but they may have. But I kind of felt like even towards up close to the showtime, we were still trying to figure out a way to maybe make this work. So I kind of felt like if they would have canceled it, you know, we wouldn't have been doing all that. But like I said, that was 11 years ago, so I don't remember. But no, so I've never seen him.
Well, I recommend it.
Okay.
He's really good. I've seen him a few times.
So what do you know?
This is what I know. For the first time in a month, Kyle Larson did not win a NASCAR Cup Series race.
Neither did a Hendrick car.
That's actually not true.
No?
No, because they did a doubleheader. So they had
Saturday. Oh, I was thinking of Kyle Busch.
They had Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, Kyle Larson is leading. He's coming to the checkers, final lap, blows a tire.
Yep.
Teammate Alex Bowman, who is friend of the show, gets his third win of the year. So Bowman keeps the Hendrick train going and gets the win. And then yesterday, fuel mileage game comes into play. Larson actually finishes second, but Kyle Busch gets his second win.
He was stuck in fourth gear.
Stuck in fourth. Had a bad transmission. I was watching his post-race press conference, and he kind of went through what had happened, that it kept popping out of gear. It would pop out of fourth gear, and so he kind of shoved it in fourth gear, and then it wouldn't move out. So they had all sorts of issues with that, but able to hold on and win on the fuel mileage game, and Larson comes in second. So Larson's streak comes to an end at Pocono.
Yep. Pretty interesting weekend, them doing the double.
I like it, because if you're going to go, because I'm kind of the, and Busch talked about this, that he believes you should only go to every track one time. Now, I agree with that to an extent. I think there are some that deserve to, like Daytona, you should go twice, Talladega, because they're the only super speedways.
Yep.
I'm good with the short tracks twice, you know, especially if you're going to do Bristol Dirt, Bristol Night, like that's fine. But Pocono twice, unless it's the doubleheader set up in one weekend. Michigan twice, no. I like that they moved a race from Dover to here. You know, so I agree to an extent that there are some that you only need to go one time and then go to some new places, which I think you're going to see them do. But I have no issue with the doubleheader weekend.
All right, let's get some phone calls in before we get out of here. Then we head east. Let's start things off with, it says BPN. BPN, what do you know?
What's up, guys? This is Backpedal Nate.
Backpedal Nate.
My man.
Wow.
Y'all doing all right today?
Oh, we're better now.
You escaped. I'm shocked nobody put you on the list on Friday. Shocked.
I was too. I actually had a tweet written out into response for what, and when you weren't especially really daring, was going to say, and I was surprised. So. Yep. But this is what I know, fellas. If I was a professional sports organization and something like what has happened to NC State was going, you know, you were looking for players and that was one of the players, I would be a little concerned, because what have we always talked about with the Titans? They always ask, do you truly love football? And I mean, if you ask this player, they're going to say, yes, I truly love the sport. Then you're going to ask them, why didn't you get the vaccine to basically, you know, almost guarantee. It's not always a guarantee, but to better the chances of not having this breakout. So as a professional organization, I would be skeptical of players at teams like NC State with that happening. Okay. I know it's a touchy subject.
Yeah. But. Okay. All right. Thank you, Nate. I don't know if not getting the shot questions whether you love the sport or not. I mean, like I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, some obviously, if you go read this, there's a lot of players that chose not to, and that's their prerogative, but it's also the NCAA's prerogative whenever an outbreak happens.
They got to make a ruling.
And it stinks, but hey, like you didn't know that that could happen? I mean, I think we've kind of been through all that, right? I mean, it's like, hello. I think we've stopped. That should never crop up in our mind ever again. Like, we know this can happen. We've seen it play out in every sport. So, but I don't know if I would really question, you know, if they love playing baseball because they chose not to. And I get it. They did jeopardize their run. They jeopardized their season, and unfortunately it played out for them. Let's go to Barrett down in the borough. What do you know?
Hey, I looked up the Bridgestone Arena concert history, and Elton John is not up here in 2010. Is that who you were talking about?
No, Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
All this recent Elton stuff has been showing up, and I just got it confused.
I did get a text. That concert did happen. You were right.
A couple, 3 days for the water to get up that far. And I remember being terrified because when they built that place, it was the city of Nashville's emergency coordination place for the safest place in the whole town, right? Bomb-proof and all that. And they're under 6 feet of water inside there, so they couldn't do anything. It all ran down that ramp. I'm on the same page as Nate with what I know. If you're rolling into a big, congested, populated tournament with close quarters and hotels and travel in June of this year, and you're bringing COVID with you, you are not just don't love the game. You're absolute, complete, total idiots and morons. The staff, the coaches, the players, everybody, they're the dumbest people in this country to subject other people to that and be so arrogant that, oh, I'll have my beliefs, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? You're really stupid, and it costs you big time. They could have won. They could be in this final coming up tonight. But we'll never know because they were just idiots. So they deserve whatever they get, and there's zero sympathy for them and any other team that pulls that ridiculous, selfish move. You gentlemen have a nice day.
All right, thank you. You too. All right, let's sneak one more in. Let's out in Omaha. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you know?
Good afternoon. This is what I know. NC State fans said that Coach Corbin requested testing when he exchanged a lineup card. I know that is not true. We got in the stadium about 1 o'clock, and they didn't even have the field ready yet.
Yeah.
So there hadn't been a pregame meeting yet. So I'm pretty sure that was all standard protocol because they already had so many guys test positive.
Yeah.
And we also heard from a sports bar we were at Saturday that their players had been in there like 3 nights in a row and they were off. And I'm not saying they can't go out and have a good time, but I haven't seen any Vanderbilt players out. I mean, they probably have some, but if you go back to the basketball tournament, the women, I mean, they had to go straight to their room like after every game. I know it was 6 months ago, but.
Yeah.
And then I saw where one of their fans was burning a Vanderbilt shirt with the United States flag on it.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
Yeah. It's way out of hand, Mike. We definitely, it's pretty silly, some of the stuff that's out there. But no, I agree. Look, we've all seen the same stuff, and what you said, Tim Corbin did not do that. I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
Yeah, I guarantee you he would much rather have played.
Of course.
He's not going to back down from anybody.
By the way, it's not Tim Corbin of Vanderbilt's job to do that. So that's the NCAA's job, which they're doing with every team. So it's just a ridiculous notion. It just really is. Hey, continue having fun out there, Mike. We're jealous that we're not in Omaha. That will do it for this hour. We'll come back. We'll head east. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara in Knoxville. We do that next on the DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game.